agreements, they have taken care of it. So now he says okay to boycott, and it happened before. But if it doesn't happen now, meaning that we don't know something. It's going to harm us if we boycott them. Yeah? So boycotting, that's why many of the ulama, they said boycotting is haram.
And finally, London-based Shamsi, a pro-Saudi Salafist preacher who appeared on a podcast with Faraz Hamadi, mocking those who have called for boycotting Starbucks in solidarity with the people of Gaza and deflecting with claims about social media links to Zionism.
There are, of course, big multi-million dollar companies like Starbucks and McDonald's and other kind of names.
You know, I love Starbucks, you know. People are driving me crazy. Starbucks.
I don't drink Starbucks, by the way, but you're drinking Starbucks, right? I saw some of your videos, you're holding the cup. I'm like, man, this guy's going to get a lot of heat now.
You don't understand. You know, I'll tell you this funny story, yeah? Someone sent me a message on Instagram. And he said to me, Akhi, do you know that Starbucks is a Zionist supporter? I said, okay. I said, do you know that Instagram, the owner of Instagram, is a Zionist supporter?
These men and many other influencers like them belong to a wing of Salafism referred to sometimes disparagingly as Madkhalism. One core tenet is that Muslims must always obey their leaders, a concept that is generally accepted by some Muslims, but for those influencers, there don't appear to be any particular conditions as to when disobeying those rulers should be prioritized, such as when those leaders are collaborating with Israel.
Joining us today to talk these issues through are two esteemed guests and favorites of the show. With me in the studio is Sheikh Ahmed Hanif, who is one of our few honourable scholars that is unapologetic in his Islamic duty of condemning the oppression in Palestine. He graduated from the Islamic Seminary in Qum and lectures in the UK. And joining us on Skype is Brother Shakil Afsar from Birmingham. Shakil is a prominent Kashmiri activist who has tirelessly campaigned against Islamophobia in the UK and abroad, and has consistently championed the Palestinian cause in the mainstream. Thank you to you both for joining us. Sheikh, if I can come first and foremost to you. I don't know how you felt watching, you know, that VT. That was, it made me angry. But as a scholar, you know, what are the responsibilities of Muslim scholars in times of oppression? We saw that, masalan, these people were saying that we should avoid boycotting. You know, specifically, is that something that Muslim scholars have the right to say or do?
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the time of oppression, in the time of the extremes of oppression, like what we are seeing in Gaza right now, the duty of Muslim scholars is to provide clarification, understanding to the people of why this is happening, what are the forces behind it, you know, who are on what side, and what role should we play in this. I think a lot of people tend to have a very limited idea of what the Muslim scholars who are the leaders of our society should do. They think that they should only be providing, spiritual services, but not be involved in the issues of community empowerment, consolidation, and guidance in terms of how to face the challenges that are presented to their societies. And this is one of the challenges that is being presented to our society, and we can judge them by their response.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. You know, judging these kind of scholars, just as we saw earlier, Shakil, if I can come to you, as we saw earlier in the show, you know, there are some Muslim scholars who have taken an approach that some would call disappointing, some would call treacherous. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. At a time when a lot of British Muslims don't actually know what to do and they are at wit's end, we have scholars saying that we shouldn't be boycotting. We have scholars saying that we should be listening to Muslim leaders. The question I have for these Muslim scholars, or so-called scholars I would call them, is what are the Muslim leaders actually doing? Do they not see the videos that are coming out of Palestine? Do they not see the young innocent children? If British Kashmiris, American Kashmir Muslims, if Muslims all over the world want to boycott because they feel that is the only weapon they have, why are people pushing them away from this? Maybe those scholars are on the payroll of the oppressors. You know, a lot of times people will tell and misguide the community to serve their own pockets. And, you know, I firmly believe that people like these scholars who, for whatever reason, I'm not a scholar myself, and I have never, you know, claimed to be one, but what I do suggest is, why are these people pushing away, you know, people who stand by Palestinians from wanting to do something? You know, they're saying we must listen to the Muslim governments, but every single one of you can see, what are the Muslim governments really doing? We have Muslim superpowers who have nuclear power and they are sat on the fence. You know, I firmly believe at the end, when this is all said and done, we won't remember the oppression of our oppressors, but we will really remember the silence of our friends.
Really well said. You know, I remember reading a statistic to say that all the Muslim countries in the world, they occupy, you know, a sixth of the world's wealth, if not more. And they could not get a drop of water into Gaza. They have not yet done anything to actively, really, on the ground, make an impact on the genocide that's going on. And just as Shakil said, Sheikh, you know, some Muslim leaders are, or Muslim scholars, preachers, are actually thinking about their own pocket because they are getting some money for their stances, let's say. But religiously, and the question to you is, religiously, are there any justifications for Muslims to stay silent when it comes to oppression?
No, and I think that goes against the statement by the Holy Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, when he said, when a Muslim is confronted with a wrongdoing, it's a Muslim, he didn't say the Muslim ulama, okay? When they're confronted with a wrongdoing, they should change it with their hands. You know, meaning that if you have the power, for example, the political power, the economic power, you see, to be able to actively change that, then you should do that. And if you cannot do this, then you should speak out against it with your tongue. You know, and speaking out against it with our tongues include things like demonstrations, for example. You know, chants, slogans, analyses, historical approaches to these types of things. And if you cannot do this, which means that the situation is so repressive, you know, that just speaking out with the tongue is dangerous to you, can get you killed. You know, then you hate it in your heart, and hating that wrongdoing in your heart is the least of iman. In other words, if you had 1 ounce of iman, you know, you should be able to hate oppression. At any rate, at this point in time, we don't have that intense oppression over speech yet to say that we cannot speak out, you see? And so when people talk about, you know, only the scholars have the right to say this and the scholars have the right to say that, or the quote-unquote leaders, I don't know what they mean by this amorphous term, leaders, All right? What is this actually denying us is agency, you see, because that hadith, it applies to all Muslims, you know, not that, you know, you just have to follow your leader for you to decide to take action.
Yes, absolutely, Sheikh. And, you know, the Muhammadi spirit is clear. It encourages the good and forbids the evil. But some believe that this is a personal endeavor not to be mixed in with politics. We went to the streets of London to ask Muslims about what they expect from religious leadership during times of war, and in this case, genocide.
We need to see calls for action made against this vile, genocidal Israeli entity. So what we want to see from our speakers, we want to see calls for boycotting, we want to see pressure being put on these members of parliament, we want to see anything that can be done to aid our brothers and sisters in Gaza and Palestine. Anything that can be done, we want to see it being done. So anyone who has a voice and has been silent on this matter, just understand that the community is not going to forget this.
Whether like very political or like just, you know, the social media scholars as we know them, we've seen them there from the start. And then 7 October onwards, we saw them, you know, even come out more. And, you know, I think every day their stories, their feed is just about Palestine. And they've been teaching us how to talk more, how to advocate more. boycotting, the role of, like, you know, to keep this going, to keep talking about it.
I think, like, for example, the other day, Said Sistani put, I don't know if you saw it, on Karbala, on Imam al-Abbas grave, alayhi salam, he put, like, a big poster that it's wajib to boycott and stuff. Like, as much as you can, because obviously you can never boycott everything, but as much as you can, you know, if you go to a supermarket, you see cola on the fridge, you don't buy it.
We should not stop. The protests should not stop. We should not stop speaking about it. Everyone that has a platform, you have 2 followers, 3 followers, 5 followers, everyone needs to speak, push it forward. You meet someone in the cafeteria, speak to them, see what they're saying, teach them. And another thing that I think is very important is when we are going to the protest, is that we understand, I'm talking especially to the Muslims, is for us to stick and stick to the Quran and Sunnah and the Sharia, that we don't, you know, do things that go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has told us to do.
Shaquille, if I can come to you in this question. In the West, many scholars have stayed silent. Do you think that this exposes where people's loyalties lie? You did, you know, briefly in your previous answer, talk about their pockets aligned. You know, can you go into a bit more detail about that?
Well, look, I can say, and credit where credit is due, some of these Muslim institutions, some of these scholars, unfortunately, are silent because of the pressures that exist. So I totally understand that these institutions have been set up to push forward the message of Islam, to allow people to pray, allow people to congregate in prayer. But what these institutions must understand, we understand the pressures that they face by the British establishment. But at this current time, it is time that they face these pressures head on, and the communities will stand with them. A lot of, you know, institutions, a lot of masajids, a lot of trusts that have been set up, their answer to not speaking is, we do not want to have our masjids closed down. We do not want to have, you know, external reviews happening on what's happening internally. But I say to each and every single one of them that if now is not the time to face our problems, then when is? If these institutions cannot be the pillars of our community and lead the communities to stand for the Palestinians, then who will? We have so many people within Birmingham who are actually going through PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and this violent situation hasn't even finished yet because of the sheer fact of the, you know, the videos that are coming out, the horrific scenes that we are seeing. If our ulama, if our imams, if our institutions are not going to give direction to the Muslims, who is?
Excellent question. Excellent point, pardon me, that you've made there. If they're not actually going to be doing their job, if they're not going to be leading the Muslim Ummah, you know, acts of acting, as you mentioned, in encouraging the good and forbidding the evil is iman, it is faith. And if people are going to be discouraging them from that, people like Mehdi Mudarrisi and Ammar Nakhchiwani, who have in the past diverted people's attention from their support of Palestine, quelling in their rhetoric, in their language, quelling the thirst of the people for change through activism, and even profiting off of this genocide through putting some of their lectures behind a paywall, Sheikh. Like, it beggars belief. What would be your response to this kind of leadership?
Well, you know, I think when leadership abandons its responsibility, that vacuum must be naturally filled. And when I say must be naturally filled, the leadership will come from somewhere else. You see? And this is what we would call maybe revolt or rebellion. So, for example, in this issue of Palestine and what's happening in Gaza, you would find that if, for example, a particular establishment or particular individuals who might be prominent in the society and so forth do not provide the guidance that is necessary to respond to this, which goes back to these three modes, okay? Boycotting means action, the power that we have, you see? When they do not fulfill these three modes, then what happens is you would find the youth, the younger generation, others who see that flaw, you know, who will fill that gap. And this is exactly what is happening with the Gaza issue. You know, not only in the Muslim community, but also in the non-Muslim community. Yeah. All right? You find that the the democratic force of people on the street, you know, results in not only the fall in Joe Biden's approval ratings, but also it results in the fall in the approval ratings of the people we consider to be our leaders, okay, who are also not responding to that.
Because what they're doing is exactly the same.
Exactly.
There's no longer a distinction between the religious and the non-religious leadership because their stances are exactly the same.
Exactly. And this is where now we, or the community who see that gap, you know, need to fill, and this is what is happening.
Okay, well then, in the inverse, what about the scholars who have stepped up? You know, we've got Masalan Sheikh Asrar Rashid, we've got Dr. Abdul Wahid, you know, people like, and I'll come to you, Shaquille, about this question too. But, you know, what about those people? You've got Masalan Sheikh Azhar, Hussein Makki, and all these other, you know, prominent young scholars. What about their example?
Well, I think their example is an example to be followed. I think that they are showing the true leadership in the community. You know, and I think people should be aware of that and should reward them by gathering around them and supporting them, you know, and interacting with them. Mm. Yes. And I don't think, you know, I mean, we're in a time right now where, for example, you have to follow your leaders unquestioningly. This is the 21st century. You know what I mean? There is self-criticism, you know, which is something very important. Our leaders could come up short in areas, and they should be open to criticism of others in order to improve themselves, just like we as ordinary people as well should do.
And Shaquille, if I can ask you the similar question, you know, what about scholars who have stepped up? What examples do you have of these scholars? Is there a generational gap, it seems? You know, we're seeing that a lot of young scholars, you know, in their 30s who are kind of coming out of these seminaries, they are saying what we believe, what the people can see, whereas older generation of scholars are kind of, you know, more with the establishment, generally.
Yeah, I absolutely have to agree. Namely, Brother Sheikh Asrar Rashid is actually very local to myself. And like the Sheikh in the studio just said, it's the 21st century. So the more younger scholars are actually stepping up because they are basing things on factual evidence. They are actually in touch with their community. They are liaising with their community. And they are being the pillars of society that they need to be. Unfortunately, with some institutions and some individuals, they seem to be more worried about and concerned about protecting their institution when, in fact, they are actually destroying their institution because the communities can see their silence. The communities can see that these people are completely silent on the plight of our people, whether it be the Palestinians, whether it be the Kashmiris, or whether it be any Muslims all over. So I definitely, definitely agree with the Sheikh that in the 21st century, and this is a big, there's a big movement that is taking place. And unfortunately, there will be a time when those people who were silent will be held to account. People will not forget when our blood was being spilled that these people were sat on the sidelines trying to protect their institutions when their institutions were actually set up in the first place to guide the Muslims, to help the Muslims, and moreover, to raise the plight of our people.
You know, Sheikh, what advice now in general to the Muslim public? We're not talking about leaders here, we're talking about everyday men and women. You know, what advice would you give them about their responsibility in forbidding this evil?
First of all, I think when the Muslim, or how should I say, religious elite, put it that way, and their response has to be seen also in a historical context, you know. For example, my brother here was talking about the younger sheikhs, okay? So it's a generational thing going on here. The first phase of the Muslim community establishing itself in the West is one of, how I would say, nostalgia. Mm. Yeah, you know, I'm from Bangladesh. I come here. I am in an alien environment. I want to feel at home, so I gather with my other fellow Bangladeshis, and we end up building a mosque, which is basically a Bangladeshi religious and community center, you know? And the kind of ulama that they used to invite to come and lead their communities, or people from, let's say, Bangladesh or Pakistan or whatever, being conversant with the language of the environment that you're in was not important. What was important is maintaining your own language, you know, which also meant a certain type of disconnect with the environment that you have. And then the other generation started coming, second generation, third generation, where now their lingua franca is English, where their perspective is one now that is rooted in London or Manchester or Birmingham and what have you. And they require something more. They require now a kind of interfacing between Islam and the environment in which they are. And this is where things fall apart. Mm. Because these older generation people are not in contact and not in touch with their environment and thus cannot provide that particular leadership. And so the leadership now tends to sort of want to push towards the younger ulama. At the same time, however, their institutionalized structures tend to sort of put up resistance to this. My advice to the people and the young people and others in this time is to fulfill your own leadership, is to take action, you know. And when you are doing this, you will attract the right people to lead you. You see, brave people lead to having brave leaders. Cowardly people tend to have cowardly or maybe even tyrannical leaders. You see, leaders who are not in touch in terms of not being fearless enough to risk sanctions being put on your centers and probably even the loss of your centers, you know, are not really leaders who are prepared to sacrifice. You see, and as the speakers, as the brother said, what's the name again? Brother Shaquille. You know, my dear brother Shaquille has said, you know, the people end up judging you and you end up losing the very basis for your support, which ends up with, you know, you have an empty center with nothing going on. I love
that. It's like take responsibility. Make sure that you are a people that is strong, that kind of inspires even the leaders. Because, yes, they are scholars and they are religious and they are in their books, but also they need to be inspired by your action. And it's a responsibility that falls on both leaders and the led. I love that. Thank you so much, Sheikh. And thank you, Brother Shaquille, for joining us. And thank you at home. Unfortunately, this is all that we have time for today. Please join us again next week for another edition of Eye on Islam. Assalamu alaikum.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Ishtihardi. Stay tuned. Thank you.
اگر همه کارهای انسان برای مشت حیات نفسانیه باشد دلخوشیش.
If everything humans do in this world is only for the sake of their worldly desires, there will be definitely no rewards for their actions in the hereafter. This is not something to be changed. This is the rule and the law. Because everything God does is out of a purpose and there are reasons behind it. It is not right that we do everything for all reasons except God. Let's do these good things for the sake of God. Even saying prayer or becoming the leader of prayer in congregation, if it is for the sake of other than God, it will not be accepted. This is dangerous for our faith. Ayatollah Yahya Sajjadi was a representative of the Grand Ayatollah Isfahani. He was a deeply religious and righteous person. He sometimes used to come to the city of Qom. He had speeches for the businessman in Tehran, and once he told me, "You know, Satan will appear to you before your death in my face to deceive you. Yes, he could appear as me, so you should be very careful." Heavens is a place for the purified ones. The Holy Quran suggests this fact, and we read in chapter Al-Waqi'a that only the purified ones can touch the Quran. It is not enough just to claim and say things by words. It is good, but it will not lead us to perfection. There are advantages for these claims, but not perfection in that. Perfection, according to Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam, comes in three things. The first one is to understand your religion and to explore into it. This is the first step in perfection, according to a hadith from Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam. The late Ayatollah Araki narrated from Grand Ayatollah Ha'iri, who is the founder of Qom Seminary School, this great foundation, that he gave us an interpretation of the ayah in the Quran which suggests someone from each community should go for preaching and dissemination of religion among others. Ayatollah Ha'iri believes that the sense of this ayah in the Holy Quran suggests that perhaps a community first should understand the religion and then send someone to spread it. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by the late Ayatollah Ishtihardi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care, and goodbye.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
A new study has revealed that British households grappling with financial hardship have experienced a growing reliance on food banks or relatives for groceries, with adults reporting a frequent inability to afford more than one meal a day. We have taken a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Research found that children and young people have become significantly more concerned about rising prices and their family having enough money than about the environment or crime. According to a study by Children's Society, 1 in 10 children aged 10 to 17 in the United Kingdom are unhappy with their lives. More than 2 million children in the United Kingdom are estimated in the report to be more worried about rising prices than they are about the environment, while almost 3 million do not feel positive about the future of their country or the future of the world. However, future financial security is the issue that most troubles the younger generation. More than 80% said they are significantly concerned about the impact that increased cost of living will have on their family over the next 12 months. Mark Russell, the chief executive officer of Children's Society, said, "Life is just too hard for too many children in Britain." He added, "It is a national scandal that children's happiness continues to slide. It is really shocking that almost half of all young people feel gloomy about the state of our world. We need real leadership from government to turn this around. The need for improving children's well-being is urgent." Neil Guzzelgun, policy and campaign manager at Mind, said, "Young people are bearing the brunt of the worst cost of living crisis in a generation. With almost a third of children in Britain living in poverty, it's sadly unsurprising that so many are now feeling the impact on their well-being." The report was published on the same day that a study by the food bank charity, the Trussell Trust, found half of working households in Britain on universal credit payments ran out of food last month and were unable to buy any more. Universal credit, the main UK benefit for those on low income or out of work, is claimed by 6 million people in Britain. The basic rate is at least £140 a month, below the real cost of food, energy and other basic items. A study which estimates that 700,000 people on universal credit have had to turn to charity food in the last month also found working families on universal credit had struggled to heat their homes and were more likely to skip meals and go without toiletries. Russell said that against this backdrop, it is little surprising that Children's Society research found the overall happiness of young people was at its lowest point since the survey began 12 years ago. With a younger generation significantly more unhappy about every key element of their lives than ever before, except their families. Jonathan Townsend, UK Chief Executive of Prince's Trust, said the findings provided a stark reminder that the rising cost of living is having a debilitating impact on young people's well-being and aspirations for the future. Jonathan Townsend added, "Recently, we released research which showed that continued economic uncertainty and financial pressures are taking a significant toll on young people's career ambitions and life goals, with the majority feeling anxious, unconfident, and hopeless about their plans for the future." Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. According to the children's charity Dr. Barnardo's, more than 1 million children in the United Kingdom either sleep on the floor or share a bed with parents or siblings because their family cannot afford the luxury of replacing broken frames and mouldy linen. The charity says increasing bed poverty reflects growing levels of destitution in Britain, with low-income families already struggling with soaring food and gas bills, often find that they are unable to afford a comfortable night's sleep. It says in a report published recently, acute hardship was forcing families to adopt desperately improvised sleeping arrangements. An estimated 700,000 children in Britain were sharing beds, while 440,000 children slept on the floor, leaving them tired, anxious, and finding it hard to concentrate at school. The Dr. Barnardo's research found parents and kids were often forced to share a bed. Some parents would sleep on sofas or chairs to vacate their bed for their children. Other children would spend the night on mattresses or blankets on the floor, sometimes without sheets or duvets. Some of the most vivid findings included a 3-year-old having to sleep in a baby cot, a 17-year-old teenager sleeping in a 7-year-old's bed, and a parent sleeping on a child's single mattress. Many families saw replacing broken beds as unaffordable luxury. With soaring energy bills, even regularly washing bedding was hard. Barnardo's estimates more than 336,000 families in Britain could not afford to replace or repair their beds in the last year. More than 204,000 families said their children's bed or bedding was mouldy or damp because putting the heating on was too expensive. And more than 187,000 said they couldn't afford to wash or dry bedding.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. A very warm welcome. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. This is your host, Zainab. In this program, we discuss your curious questions you have regarding the Islamic upbringing of your children. The answers are based upon the Quran and the narrations of Holy Prophet, may peace be upon him and his purified family. Well, today in our studio, we have the pleasure to be with Brother Miqdad. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
A very warm welcome, brother.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So we have another question today. I'll read it out for you. How can we upbring our children so that they can have positive impact on others and do not get influenced negatively?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is a very important question. I think there's a lot that can be said about this topic, that we want our children, the first part that you mentioned, second, which is that we aim and we want our children to be such that they don't get influenced by others.
Right.
And it's something we all understand, that you have certain children or even adults, right, that are very easily influenced by others, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody says something to them, they'll believe them, or if a particular trend occurs or particular fashion occurs within society, they're very quickly adopted without thinking about it. They're
right.
Very easily influenced by their friends, by the society, by what the media says. And society, or generally people, when you think about it, they actually count this as a very negative thing. Right. Even sometimes, even you ask them themselves, you say, how do you perceive a person who is so easily influenced by others? They'll see that that's a very bad thing. That's a person who's doesn't have a strong ground, and it's not a positive thing at all. And so we want to raise our children in a way that they don't have this weakness where they are influenced by others so easily. So this is a very important point, and we need to really think about it. How do we raise kids whereby they can think about things before adopting them in their lives? Now, this can be at the theological, at the belief level, where we believe in everything that other people say, or we adopt the ideology that others have. Others means friends or society or movies and cartoons or anything. We don't adopt them without thinking about it. Or it can be related to actions as well. And the way we do things, where we are told by others, for example, to do certain things, peer pressure, for example, comes in this. Or sometimes even the apparent of certain things, the way we dress, the way we speak. I remember sometimes you find these youths, they go for a week. They travel for a week with their friends. When they come back, they're speaking exactly the way their friends speak.
Yeah. Right?
So easily influenced in the way they speak, in the way they dress, by others. So this is something where we understand it to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
And we should think about how we can bring about children that they are not like this.
Right.
On the other side, something that we find positive is that when we have children, and again, children as well as adults as well, who are not just influenced by others, but rather they are individuals who impact others. And obviously,
right,
over here, you can count this impact as a positive or negative. Sometimes you have influencers that will impact others in a negative way.
Right.
They will be sharing certain things, sharing ideas or sharing certain behaviors, and therefore impacting others often in a negative way. But you can have people who have a positive impact on others. Often they're leaders, often they're strong personalities, mentors, teachers, or just a leader personality type, basically, where they will be not just influenced by others, but rather they will influence others. They will have a positive impact on others.
Right. Well, this topic needs to be discussed more, and there's a lot more to talk about. There are several things while you were discussing that are coming into my mind, because in our culture, what happens where you get, I would say, influenced from the most are the Bollywood movies. Well, we'll discuss about that after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Hey, stop! I got a favorite game!
IRIB English Radio presents A Priceless Gift to Parents. Do you have problem with your kids?
I have two boys. One is 5 years old and the other one is 3.5. And they constantly fight and wrestle with each other, and it often gets to a dangerous stage.
My 18-month-old daughter has learned to eat by herself, and she just refuses that I feed her. But usually, all the food basically goes everywhere except her mouth. So how can we allow this strife to happen for the purpose of freedom?
Don't worry. We're here to help.
For a child, the purpose of the food is only to feed. It's also for him to learn. It's also for him to explore and fulfill the need of curiosity, fulfill the need of freedom.
Islamic upbringing. Contact us. EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. We're with Brother Miqdad, and we're discussing how to train your children so that they do not get influenced by others, rather they have a good impact on others. And Brother Miqdad is here to help us.
Yes, so you mentioned Bollywood and the influence that people have from TV generally, children as well as adults as well. So yes, this is a good example of how us adults as well as children, they get influenced in the way they think or even in the behavior by what they see, right? And so you want to build a strength in us, in our children, that we don't adopt the values or the ideas or the behavior of others without thinking about it.
Right.
I keep repeating this because I think it's important that we understand what we're trying to talk about. When we talk about influence, what does that mean? What does it mean, influence? And influence means that we don't adopt ideas and values and behavior of others without thinking about it. Because sometimes you really want to adopt. Let's say, for example, you see a scholar or you see a teacher or you see or you hear about some of the traits of the Holy Prophet, for instance, and you want to adopt these. You want to be influenced by this. So being influenced generally is not neither negative or positive.
Right.
It's the idea of not doing it out of pure weakness, but rather doing it after a thought, after rationally. So having this level of filter, and this is what we need to create in our children, a level of filter, a level of strength in able to think about things before adopting them. So when it comes from the Holy Prophet, when it comes from a scholar, then yes, please influence me. I'd love to be influenced by you. I'd love to adopt the way you think and the way you behave. And I want to be impacted by you, right? And this is a positive thing. You want them to be influenced by their scholars, by the Prophet and the Ahlul Bayt. And so being influenced is a positive thing in this regard. And therefore, the point that we want to make over here is that when we talk about this, we talk about creating in our children, in ourselves, a filter, a strength to be able to rationalize and adopt and be influenced when we want to.
Right.
You mentioned TV, so let's discuss this very quickly. TV is perhaps one of the biggest influences in today's world. And a practical tip right over here. If you want your children to be individuals who are not influenced, but rather have a positive impact, then reduce the amount of TV that they watch. Because TV, besides all the content that is being taught, besides all the different things that they're receiving from TV, the very fact of watching TV is telling your child that you need to copy, that you need to take in without thinking. Because TV doesn't allow thought, it doesn't allow action. It's just taking in. There's a quote by the president of the United States of America regarding this, that Hollywood is not entertainment, it's rather education, basically. In other words, we've been told that TV and being in front of the screen is not simply entertainment, it's actually education. It's telling me that, look, open your mouth and you'll be spoon-fed with different things. And so the very fact that you put TV for children, you're putting something on for the children, is actually teaching them that you are being spoon-fed of how to think and how to behave without the need for thinking about it. And this is why we often say that when you watch TV, always talk about it later on, always analyze it, always discuss it with your children. This is very important.
Right. Well, Brother Meghzad, we'll discuss more with you after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "He who recites the Quran before puberty has indeed been given wisdom in his childhood."
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing with Brother Meghzad. And we're talking about how to train your children not to get influenced negatively, rather have a positive impact on others. So, Brother Meghzad, you were talking about TV. TV completely comes as if it is telling us to get spoon-fed and take in things.
So the practical point number one, if we really want to create children who have a positive impact on others and not just be influenced, is to train them to always have a filter, always create a filter for themselves before adopting something. And so when children have watched TV, when they've watched a movie, they've played a game, they've watched a cartoon, always take the opportunity over the dinner table, for example, to discuss it with them, allow them to talk about it, but not just recount what they've seen, rather to analyze what they saw, right? To criticize it, to take the good from it and expose the evil from it.
Right.
And this conversation, slowly is training them to look, when I watch something, I have to analyze it. I have to think about it. I have to explore it, whether it was correct or was not correct.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just be watching 2-3 hours, 5-6 hours, 10 hours a week, and just taking in without analyzing it. So at every opportunity, discuss it with them. What do they watch? How do they find it? What was good about it? What was not correct about it? How can we improve it? Make them have a sort of filter. And what slowly what will happen is that you're creating within them not just a sense that I have to analyze, I have to think about it, I have to create a filter, not just accept everything that comes my way, right? This is the point, that I don't just take everything in, but rather have a filter. And so you create an attitude in them, attitude of having a filter, but also you're teaching them what kind of filter to have. You're teaching them, look, what is evil and what is good? You're teaching them, look, what you saw over here, it was good because of this reason. It was bad because of this reason. This is what Islam says about this particular point. This is what our ideology teaches us. This is how we see the world. And so you are not just creating an attitude in them of being able to analyze everything and not just taking in, but you're also teaching them how to analyze it. And this is how we analyze it. That when you watch this, for example, this particular words of this person in the cartoon, for example, or this particular behavior of this movie character, this was its fault. This was wrong about it. This is what we don't accept. And so when you're doing this, you're teaching them how to analyze it as well.
Right.
This is also valid for the news as well. When you watch news and you encourage your children to watch the news, same thing as well. You talk about the news. Don't just take everything in when it comes to the news.
You're developing that media literacy.
Exactly. So teach them how to teach them first to analyze, always be on a, not on the defensive, always have a filter on you. And what is this filter? How to filter things?
Do not let everything come in. Rather have that, create that strength of rationalization in your children so that they can be more practical in their lives. Thank you so much, Brother McDowell, for being with us. Thank you so much to our listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel launches artillery attacks on the besieged Gaza in violation of an extended truce deal with Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Israeli forces killed more Palestinians in the occupied West Bank, pushing the death toll since early October to 230. Iran's leader calling for further boosting of the combat readiness of the Iranian Navy and turning it into a comprehensive and strategic force. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafik. Good to have you with us. Israel has pounded the besieged Gaza Strip in violation of an extended truce deal with Hamas resistance movement. Tanks fired at Sheikh Radwan, a district northwest of Gaza City. The regime also launched artillery attacks on the besieged territory. Footage also shows smoke blowing into the sky over the Palestinian land. The Gaza Health Ministry